Hi folks, welcome to episode 18 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I'm joined by Bo, and today we're going to be talking about Tacitus's Germania. It's a very, very interesting one. I've been looking forward to doing this. So, tell me about Tacitus.
Okay, well, Tacitus was writing in exactly 98 AD. We know that, which is nice, because quite often we don't always know exactly when they're writing these things. Yeah. But we can place it exactly, which is right at the very, very beginning of Trajan. Mm. And he decided, for whatever reason, we're not really sure why, he decided before he wrote his big long tomes, the annals and the histories, he wrote two very short essays, really. One on Roman Britain, the Agricola, which I spoke a lot with Josh about last epochs, and the Germania, just sort of about a 30-page sort of essay on ancient Germany. And it's really, really important for all sorts of different reasons, but one of the main ones is that the Teutonic peoples, the Germans, didn't write anything down.
Didn't really write anything down.
So it's one of the first things people can point to that really describes sort of the German character, the German spirit, for want of a better word, or what like
their culture and what they're like.
And
it's very different now, isn't it?
Yes, very different. And it's been used over the ages in all sorts of different ways as well. So one of the first things I wanted to say about it is, although probably most of our listeners have never heard of this, and I'd never heard of it until I sort of went to uni, and I was told it was on a reading list, I'd never heard of it. But apparently, a few generations ago, it was absolutely ubiquitous. Everyone in Germany would have known about it.
Really?
Yeah. Throughout the 18th and 19th centuries and early 20th century, it was everyone, if you were middle class or not, everyone would have known about it. Apparently it's one of those things, like, I don't know what a good example might be, but maybe Romeo and Juliet or Alfred the Great or the Arthurian legends. You don't even necessarily have to have read them, you just sort of know them because you're English.
Cultural osmosis.
One of those things for the Germans. I'd like if any German natives could comment on that, if that's correct, but that's what the histories say.
So it's part of their national myth in the 18th and 19th centuries.
Big time, yeah. That it was a school text. Mm-hmm. Certainly if you're middle class or higher, you would be expected to be familiar with what Tacitus wrote in his Germania. His full title is On the Origin and Geography of Germany, or On the Origin and Situation of Germany. And so one other thing I would like to say before we sort of get stuck in is that there's this idea, isn't there, of that you have sort of a wellspring of people or a font of peoples.
Yeah.
And there's a few over the world, isn't there? Sort of the Eurasian steppe is one. Yep. People say sort of the East African Rift Valley is the original one. There's a few throughout the world, aren't there?
Yeah.
And one of them is the sort of Scandinavian Germanic one, this idea of sort of a greater Germania, for want of a better phrase or term. And historians have argued whether that wellspring of peoples is in sort of southern Scandinavia or northern Germany. It's sort of argued over. But either way, and you could say that even the French and the British are all part of that sort of bigger, greater Germanic.
What I love about these sort of cauldrons of nations, or however they describe them, is they're basically just, there are a bunch of foreigners over there that we don't know anything about. And then suddenly, you know, hundreds of thousands of them come storming over armed to the teeth. And they're a real problem to have to deal with. And this happens repeatedly to the Romans and to everyone else from the Asiatic steppes. So it's not unfair that they're called these or considered in this way, you know. And I mean, if you think about the sort of, especially like sort of north, I guess we'll just call it Northern Europe. I mean, it was pretty unknown to the Mediterranean world what was going on up there. You know, they had no idea. They didn't know where the amber that came down the trade routes came from. They didn't know where the tin had come from a lot of the time and things like that. So to them, you know, in the ancient world, it was just like, oh, who knows? There'd be monsters and barbarians, which and Tacitus gives us a really thorough examination of the barbarians, actually. And I guess from the Romans' perspective, you would consider them very barbarian indeed.
Absolutely. There's a bit in one of the I always mention Dan Carling, don't I? But there's one in his Celtic.
I love Dan Carling, so, you know.
In one of his the Celtic Holocaust ones, he talks all about this. And of course, that very specific thing happened in the age of Caesar, that the one type of Germans pushed another type of Germans across the Danube, across the Rhine. But yeah, there's this, I suppose what Tacitus does is he gives a bit of a description of various things and then tries to run through a lot of these tribes, and you can describe it as sort of an ethnography of the peoples, which there's a long sort of fairly glorious tradition even by his time. There's one line just in the introduction to the Penguin version, the guy H. Mattingly just writes, "It has been assiduously taught in German schools and universities and made into a sort of Bible of German patriotism." That is before World War II.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can find lots of people saying basically that in all sorts of different ways.
It's weird, because Tacitus wasn't particularly flattering.
Yes and no, but yeah. So, yeah.
Like, I don't think modern Germans would recognise the attitudes of the ancient Germans as someone who lived in Germany.
Well, so, of course, yeah, of course you lived there, didn't you?
Yeah, it's very interesting how times change in 2,000 years.
Well, there's some bits that they love and some bits they want to kind of ignore.
Of
but
course.
That is like a lot of ancient history. Like there's bits in the Agricola that I read and I'm like, oh, God, it's really annoying. I really wish that detail wasn't in there. I don't like that. And then there's other bits where you're like, yes, that rings true to me. I like that. I'll remember that bit, you know. Well, there's this idea that, of sort of blood and soil comes into it, and the idea of the Volk, the German peoples, sort of a Volkish movement. What is Volkishness? And of course, the 20th century, all that comes to a head. And there was a book written by a German professor of history, Christopher Krebs, called A Most Dangerous Book, where he says that Tacitus Germania is extremely dangerous in the wrong hands, read in the wrong way, used to the wrong ends.
Being a German is extremely dangerous, what he's saying. You know? Like, again, like for a non-German reading Tacitus's Germania, it's just really interesting.
Right, that's how I see it, yeah.
It's just a fascinating look at an ancient people in the same way you could, you know, read a book about Carthage or Greece or Parthia or something like that. It's just interesting to know how the ancient Germans lived. And especially in the amount of detail that he gives us, and it's a surprising amount of detail. If you draw anything political from this, that's you. That's not this.
Well, when I first came to this, like I say, undergrad days, it wasn't introduced to me in any way that it was a handbook for National Socialists.
Well, it's not.
But I mean, well, you can make the argument, but yeah, I don't think it is.
But anything that they bring to this is them looking for something.
Right.
You have to be a National Socialist to get anything like that out of this.
Well, that's how Krebs actually ends his book. He says, Tacitus himself isn't dangerous. It's the people that used it for their own ends.
But any kind of National Socialist racial ideology would do the same with any other ethnography of their own people thousands of years ago.
But when we read certain lines, you'll think, oh, yes, that does fit.
You can see why, and Tacitus isn't endorsing this kind of attitude either. He's just remarking on it and thinking, well,
he's doing something completely different. In fact, we should mention that as well, before we dive in, is that he's not. Historians argue over exactly what he's doing and how reliable it is. But it seems, one, he's just describing the enemies on the frontiers, and two, he seems to be using it on some level as a way to criticise Rome and Roman morality by juxtaposing them to sort of the OG barbarians that are out there, and how soft the Romans of his age are.
Yeah, because it's important to remember as well that in the sort of 300 years leading up to Tacitus, the Roman Empire, the Romans themselves, had gone from being an austere and moralizing people to pretty degenerate. Women having silk clothes that you could see through and things like this. And Augustus went on a huge moralizing crusade a couple of generations earlier. And so it's not like they weren't aware that they were becoming pretty, indulgent after having the fruits of empire at their feet.
Yeah, and yeah, this idea that even in the age of Augustus, which is nearly 100 years before this, already there's this sort of idea in the Roman consciousness, I suppose you could say, of a sort of a decline or a moral decline.
Totally.
And that, you know, that people sleeping around all the time, marriage doesn't mean anything, all that sort of thing. We've even got sort of quite rude poems by people like Ovid and Juvenal and stuff, where you can see that, their morals are a bit lax.
And if you go back to the sort of early Republic Romans, they were incredibly austere.
Extremely, even for the ancient world.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So, they were famous in the ancient world for being very prudish. And so, yeah, it is interesting in that way.
Well, there's this one quote on that document there, the one near the top, the Romans justly considered. I thought maybe this is, it's just from a relatively obscure German thinker from the early 19th century. But it sums up lots of different quotes you can find that all sort of mirror this.
So the Romans justly considered the German people as an ancient, pure and unmixed original people. It resembled only itself and, like identical field plants that spring from a pure seed, do not differ from one another through degeneration, so also among the thousands stemming from the simple German race, there was but one form and identical form of body.
Hmm.
And that's what a 19th century German thinks of it.
Yes. Hmm. And so one last thing before we jump in, we're going to jump in soon. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say is that people probably know that Germany, as it exists today, is a newcomer to the world of
nation states. Yeah.
I mean, Bismarck, we're talking 1871, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is when the First Reich begins, 1871. So that's extremely late, isn't it?
Mm.
And now even countries, nations like England, which are steeped, really, you know, have got a long and glorious tradition, even we sometimes can struggle with a bit. Well, what does it mean to be English? What is Englishness and all that sort of thing? Yeah. So the Germans struggle with it even more, especially when they're being subverted from various angles. They struggle with it even more. What does it mean to be German? Because people say, well, there's only been a Germany since 1871. Mm. However, the idea...
Yeah, there have been Germans for thousands
exactly,
of years.
Exactly.
And they know that.
The idea of a Germania
is
ancient.
Yeah.
Absolutely ancient. Even Tacitus says there's sort of no real doubt which tribes are German and which ones aren't.
Mm.
So what it's like Italy. Italy was only unified in the sort of late 19th century. There's this idea that, well, for a couple of hundred years before 1871, there was a long, quite bitter struggle about what it means to be German, who isn't and who isn't German. And it seems that Tacitus, specifically the Germania by Tacitus, played a large role in that, because again, you can find lots of quotes, lots of people saying, if you want to know what it means to be German, what the spirit of Germanness is, you need only read Tacitus.
Well, that's really not very encouraging at all, because he calls them lazy and stupid.
Yeah, not those bits, though.
Yeah.
Ignore those bits.
Yeah. No, that's not the spirit of being German.
The bit where it says we're all massive and really strong, remember that bit?
Yeah.
But particularly the bit, because that quote I picked out there, particularly the idea that they're no admixture of foreign peoples. They come from there. They're sort of aboriginal, for want of a better word. Autochthonous, is that the
autochthonous, one? Autochthonous, yeah. That's how the Athenians describe themselves.
Right, yeah. And I think archaeology or maybe DNA research shows that's not the case for the Athenians, but it may well be the case for some of the Scandinavian and Germanic peoples. Yeah. I mean, way back from when, if every human came from the East African Rift Valley, which I don't know if they think is true anymore. We're getting into too much. Let's talk about the Germania.
But the point is, and Tacitus makes this point as well at one point, it's like, well, Germany isn't really a very nice land. Why would you go there?
Yeah.
You know, if you're moving somewhere, why would you go there? You know, and that's a good point, really. I think he's underselling it a bit. It's not. It's nice.
That's funny.
Anyway.
You've got down a line there, which I've also picked out, but we've got different translations, which I really like that, because you can see, you can kind of see maybe what the original wording might have really meant.
Yeah.
You've got two different translations.
Like looking at the same thing from different angles, isn't it?
And the one about... that the landscape is unpleasant.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. So, they're gods. What sort of gods did they worship?
All right, well, Tacitus talks about a god called Tuisto. Am I pronouncing that right?
Tuisto, yeah, I think so. Tuisto.
Which they say was sort of their main god that they worshipped, and that they thought that his sons, this Tuisto's sons, or possibly the sons of Hercules, it's not really sure, it's lost in mists of time, were the founders of Germany.
Yeah.
So I've heard another quote, giving a lot of credit to Tacitus, saying he was the second founder of Germany, the first being this legendary Tuisto.
Tacitus is not doing that at all.
What you're saying, they might have put him on a pedestal to some degree.
No,
of course.
No.
There's another legend that Ulysses or Odysseus also went up there at some point and founded something.
Obvious
but
nonsense.
That's nonsense, of course. I mean, Odysseus probably
didn't even exist.
Not even real.
Yeah. Same with Hercules, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, quite.
But Tacitus did claim that there was some sort of monument that was set up by Hercules there or something like that. Mm. Again, obvious nonsense, but like, you know, they thought that this was credible.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.